Please come back from recess, wherever you are. There is Commissioner Saltzman. All right, Carla, would you please read? So we're back from recess to our second item on the Wednesday, 2 p.m., February 25th session of the Portland City Council, 3 o'clock time certain. Carla, would you please read the title for item number 198.
Support the creation of a Columbia Crossing Mobility Council charged with developing performance-based management recommendations for the Columbia River Crossing project.
And the first thing I'd like to do is to move a substitute resolution, which I will walk through in excruciating detail in a second.
Is that your motion?
I move.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to substitute the resolution from the placeholder, which was in the book. Any discussion on that on council? If not, please call the roll.
Fritz?
Yes, I accept the resolution I got to 1 minute ago.
Yes.
Fish?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. All right. This is another meeting in a continuing discussion of the Columbia River Crossing. Some of us have been attending meetings for four years, some for 11 years. There will be continuing discussions before this body, as well as the City Council of Vancouver and the boards of CTRAN and TriMet, the Metro Council, the Regional Council in Clark County, the County Board, Clark County Board, will be elements of this discussion will be coming back here. Today, for council consideration, as promised at our last meeting, is to give me direction on the issue of the number of lanes for the proposed Columbia River crossing at I-5. We've been looking for common ground, both in terms of our partners on the south of the river, but also common ground with our partners to the north of the river. I will go into some detail on what that is. If the council is amenable, I thought that I would give some introductory information and then have testimony. I think we have 9 people signed up, and then have questions and discussion after that, if that's okay with folks. That way they hear a variety of points of view. I'm going to explain a little bit of background of why I'm proposing what I am today. We are known in this region and parts of this region for being innovators in certain aspects of transportation. Clearly, we're innovators when it comes to transit, when it comes to pedestrian mobility systems, when it comes to bike mobility systems. We actively plan and manage those transportation modes. But when it comes to vehicular roadway management, we are, in my opinion, in the dark ages. We tend to build a freeway, build a street, build a road, and especially if it's outside the grid, and especially if it is a freeway, we just sort of walk away and leave it to function however it's going to function. For those of you that have followed my work on the CRC Advisory Committee that included 40-odd people, for those of you that have followed my comments on the Project Sponsors Council, you know that I have long advocated for this region to take a more active role in managing, not just developing and building, but actually managing our transportation systems. And I'm going to read for you the op-ed that Vancouver Mayor Royce Pollard and myself put together, walk through the resolution, and then we can take testimony. And the op-ed reads as follows. A new I-5 bridge across the Columbia River is about more than just the number of lanes or new transit service or tolls. It's also an opportunity to show ourselves and the nation a smarter way forward. We must build a new bridge, but it must be the right kind of bridge, and the right bridge must include new cross-river partnerships that actively manage daily mobility to get the most out of our investment in the Columbia River crossings. The Portland-Vancouver metro area is poised to seize a unique opportunity as we plan for a new Columbia River crossing. The project is one of great importance and unprecedented magnitude in Washington and Oregon. As local officials in the two states linked by this project, we are joined in the following thoughts and proposal by Metro President David Bragdon, Vancouver City Council Member Tim Levitt, and Clark County Commissioner Steve Stewart. All of us have participated in years of planning at the CRC, and each of us welcomes the benefits that a new crossing will bring to our community. Done right, the project promises safer and more reliable multimodal travel for people and goods while reducing negative impacts on our environment. Done wrong, today's gridlock moves south to downtown Portland, and 20 years from now, the new bridge is once again filled with stop-and-go traffic. With that in mind, we have a proposal for consideration by the community and by individual elected bodies giving us guidance. The idea takes us beyond decisions on lanes and construction to a time when the new bridge is open, which will be 2018, and our communities can assess how the crossing functions within a larger system. We acknowledge that to the casual observer of this project, this proposal is an unusual step, but our region has always been home to innovation. So we liken this new cross-river partnership to a thermostat. You would not build a home heating system without a way to regulate the airflow, the control the temperature based on time of day, outside conditions, and who are using what rooms. Nor should we build a freeway bridge without a mechanism to adjust conditions for maximum efficiency. Just as you would at home, we will define the comfort zone for the new Columbia River crossing. Before adjusting the thermostat, we need to build the house, and along with other members of the CRC Project Sponsors Council, we are slated to make a decision in March about the number of lanes on the new bridge. We propose that the bridge be built to accommodate up to 3 add-drop lanes and 3 through lanes. But these lanes will not be created equal. Our new partnership agreement will determine how the lanes will be phased and managed over time, and to get the right mix of tolling, HOV and hot lanes, van pools, and transit fare programs to reduce vehicle miles traveled and pollution. Because our partnership recognizes that these decisions affect more than just the limited I-5 bridge influence area, we propose to actively assess and manage other impacted areas, including the I-205 River Crossing and Rose Quarter. The Columbia River Crossing will function differently in 2030 than it does on opening day. Technology will change, as will community needs. We share the belief that a performance-based thermostat is the best tool we have to ensure the new bridge meets the needs of current and future citizens. What we envision as an actively managed Columbia River Crossing, no other jurisdiction in this nation has done. We are determined to blaze a new trail towards smart transportation management and protect our investment for generations to come. And we look forward to putting our active transportation partnership into action for the benefits of both communities now and for future generations. So the resolution, substitute resolution, provides me the direction basically contained in that op-ed. Attachment A provides a concept on how the Columbia Crossing Mobility Commission would work. We wanted more of an agreement than this is what we're going to do. We also provide some process, the governance, the partners would be ODOT, WashDOT, the cities of Portland and Vancouver, TriMet, C-Tran Metro, RTC, Port of Portland, Port of Vancouver. It'll start with I-5, but consideration of expanding it to 205. Terms of the governance, the chair will be appointed jointly by the governors of the two states of Oregon and Washington. Each partner is a non-elected citizen representative to serve 3-year terms on the Columbia Crossing Council. The way it will basically work is similar to the JPAC process, where the Columbia Crossing Council will recommend to ODOT, can recommend as well to the City of Portland, to TriMet, can recommend to the ports and other partners what they need from each partner to achieve the performance goals that will be set forth in the coming months. They will submit an annual plan to those partners. The partners can choose to accept them or they can reject them with comments, giving the Columbia Crossing Council the ability to, on an annual basis, sort of work out any differences. This council can make changes if it's unanimous to the performance goals in the future, and if all else fails, if we get, let's say, a runaway Columbia Crossing Council, the partners may unanimously override a recommendation from the council if they pass the resolution. Each governing body of the partnerships pass the resolution. Attachment B is the beginning conversation about a performance warranty. We are going to be spending billions of dollars on this project, and we begin to lay out in Attachment B financial, safety and health, travel reliability, sustainability, and also performance measures outside the actual crossing management district area to make sure that we're not sub-optimizing performance across the rivers, only again to have it land unintended consequence in downtown Portland. So those are, that is what I have before the City Council today. It is general direction.
Mayor, with respect to the attachment A,
yep.
If we have some questions, just clarifying questions, we pose them to you or to a panel?
We can start with me, and if I need help, I'll pull Catherine up here or somebody else.
So I have two questions. They're just for clarification.
Sure.
Just so I better
understand.
We
can do that up front.
The first is under governance.
Mm-hmm.
And just the reason for the decision to have non-elected citizen representatives and to circumscribe the universe of eligible people to be non-elected.
There's a lot of conversation among the proposers of this on how do you best ensure conformance towards the goals, and that if difficult decisions are to be made, there was a consensus around the table that those difficult decisions were best made by non-elected representatives. That if there was changes to fares or changes to tolls that are recommended, that staggered terms from non-elected citizens would be probably more likely to recommend that than elected officials.
Okay. So in part to insulate people from that kind of pressure. And the second question I have is under the page 2 of the attachment, and that is the requirement that the partners, and I count 10 partners, must unanimously override a recommendation. And so just your thoughts as the difference between, say, a majority, a supermajority, or in this case, unanimity.
Great question. And again, the conversation around the table, it was because if you have changes in governors for the co-chair and you have changes in administrations and people are in the boards of directors of these various organizations, that the composition of the Columbia Crossing Council could change. And it might reflect a different political point of view over time than who the elected leaders might be in charge. So the notion of there's that. The second is the notion that there's a possibility for a runaway Columbia River Crossing. So the group around the table that worked on this proposal, on the other hand, though, wanted a very high bar for overturning those recommendations to keep the focus of discussions on the Columbia Crossing Council, to really make that the body that over time gets the expertise and develops the history on how best to actively manage the district, but still having a fail-safe for the local governments to go directly to the dots if necessary. So that fail-safe was important to people as well. So there's a lot of sort of balancing of checks and balance, inherent checks and balances in the concept that's proposed.
So I wonder if I could offer what I think would be a friendly amendment.
Okay.
And it's in your now, therefore it be resolved. The first one, it currently reads, the city recommends that a new bridge be built to accommodate up to 3 add-drop lanes and 3 through lanes. And I would suggest just after lanes, adding 3 words in each direction.
Yeah, sure. That's a friendly amendment.
Do we need to vote on that? We do. So I'd move that.
Second.
That's a Scribner's.
Yep. Yeah.
Fritz?
So we're clarifying that we're giving direction for a 12-lane bridge. Aye.
My understanding of the amendment is we're just correcting a Scribner's error and not changing the substance of the,
no, but the
resolution.
Up to?
It says it's a 12-lane bridge, not a 6-lane bridge.
It's a structure that can accommodate up to 12 lanes. That's an important clarification for me.
Okay. Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Any other clarifying questions?
I have a clarifying question. You said that the council and would be able to review the performance goals. By that, you mean our council?
No, the Columbia Crossing Council.
So in your resolution, it says a timetable for developing a mutually acceptable set of performance goals.
Sorry, two. One is developmental. One is after it's constructed and up and operating. The performance goals will be coming back to this council for consideration. Yes, once we put them in place, the Columbia Crossing Council can make changes to those performance goals. For example, if electric vehicles catch on and it significantly changes the experience of emissions, we want somehow for future decision makers that are looking at all the modes to be able to make changes to reflect that in the performance warranty.
So how are you considering that the 10 members of the Mobility Council would get to a mutually acceptable set of performance goals? Do all 10 jurisdictions have to approve their performance goals that the Mobility Council will be reviewing?
Be working with?
Yes.
Yes.
So everybody has to unanimously accept the same performance standards.
Right, and that's actually just an acknowledgement of the existing process. We're just calling for that to be done in a more comprehensive way and done up front, as opposed to sort of piece by piece by the end of the, you know, that where all the individual performance goals were done piecemeal by the end of the sponsor's project council process.
And do you have a proposed timeline for that?
We're going to, at the project sponsor's council, at the next project sponsors council, we're going to be working on coming up with a timeline and a work plan for developing the performance warranty. But we don't have that now because the project sponsors council hasn't met. But for me personally, you know, sooner than later, given the workload of staff and the ability to gather and analyze information. Any other clarifying questions? Catherine, anything I left off or anything you want to underscore? So Catherine heads up our transportation team in the mayor's office.
Yes, thanks. Just one quick clarification in response to your question, Commissioner Fritz, about who would agree on these initial goals. The mayor had said it was all 10 jurisdictions, but actually it's the jurisdictions of the project sponsors council. We have a lot of councils bouncing around here, so I just wanted to clarify that.
But it's the same that the Vancouver City Council has to approve the same set of performance goals that the Portland City Council approves?
If the Vancouver City Council, in authorizing their representative to make this, would like to do so, and I assume that they would.
That's been the practice of all of us have gone back to our respective bodies for consideration. Any other clarifying? Catherine, anything else that I mangled or you want to amplify? Or
I don't think so.
Okay, thank you. Carla, let's begin working through the sign-up sheet.
The first three are Aaron T. Evans, Christopher Lowe, and Terry Parker. And they'll be followed by Michael Stone, Ray Polani, and Mike Smith.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Portland City Council. We're glad you're here. All you have to do is give us your first and last name, and you'll have 3 minutes, and the clock in front of you will help you keep track. Glad you're here. Mr. Evans?
Thank you, Mayor and Commissioners. Good afternoon.
My name is Aaron Evans, and I live in the Irvington neighborhood of Portland. I'm a registered Democrat, and I voted for all of you. I think 8 lanes is a reasonable size, and 10 lanes is a stretch, and 12 lanes in our difficult times right now seems absurd to be embarking upon. If you think about the city of Portland's share of the price difference between a 10-lane bridge and a 12-lane bridge, how many potholes would that fix in northeast Portland, and how many sidewalks would that build in southeast? When I drive around East Portland, it doesn't look like the city that works. It looks like the city that time forgot. I'm wondering what the priorities are here. It seems like this bridge will benefit mostly Vancouver, or maybe 60-40 Vancouver-Portland. 12 lanes is the size of the 405 freeway in Los Angeles. I don't see that as being sustainable. Vancouver does not share the same commitment to transit and promoting alternatives to driving that Portland does. They have a good commitment to transit, but not as good as ours. I would suggest as an alternative an 8-lane bridge with a design that would accommodate adding up to 2 lanes in each direction at a later time if our cities do grow to the size where we need that. Thank you.
Thanks for being here. Thanks.
Hello. My name is Christopher Lowe. At present, I'm a public health graduate student at OHSU working in environmental and social epidemiology. I also hold a PhD in history from Yale University and have taught history at Reed College, PSU, and several other colleges in the area. Before turning to my main public health concern, let me begin with this observation. In effect, the decision to support a 12-lane CRC option here will be the first action of the Cross River Partnership described by Mayors Adams and Pollard in their recent joint op-ed article. If the partnership begins by making such a bad initial decision from the point of view of sustainability and public health, what reason is there to trust that any of its subsequent decisions will handle those concerns well? Since coming here today and seeing the actual resolution, which was not available before, I'd also note that the composition includes 2 departments of transportation, 2 transport agencies, 2 ports, and representations of the city, but nothing that would represent either environmental or public health concerns. So I would raise questions about why we should not have perhaps representations from Oregon DEQ and Washington Ecology, from the Department of the health aspects of the Department of Human Services in Oregon, and whatever the counterpart in Washington would be. I feel that I don't trust the composition of this organization council as it's laid out. The main body of what I had intended to testify on, I'm going to have to cut short because of what I just said. But I have great concerns about what are called ultrafine particulate emissions, which is something that's been a focus of recent public health concern in air pollution. And I'm concerned about the likelihood that a fast transit bridge at the Columbia River will create new bottlenecks or intensify the bottlenecks that exist on East Side Portland at the places where I-5 and I-84 come together, plus all the different interchanges for getting across the Willamette. And the mayors talk about congestion in downtown Portland. I am concerned about congestion in East Side Portland back up along I-84 and the likelihood that this particular kind of ultrafine particulate emission, which is tied to diesel exhaust and other kinds of health affecting air pollution, will be intensified in residential areas on the east side of Portland. And I don't think this has been examined at all in the environmental impact statements. I don't think the planning process has looked enough at the traffic impacts throughout the entire city of Portland from a health point of view.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Glad you're here. Mr. Parker.
Kerry Parker, Northeast Portland. I'm too going to deviate a little bit from what I said because I hadn't seen what was on the table. If this bi-state commission is established, one of the stipulations must be the commission is not just another means to establish politically motivated social engineering and or socialist making policy. Article 1, Section 20 of the Oregon Constitution reads, equality of privileges and immunities of citizens. No law shall be passed granting to any citizen or class of citizens privileges or immunities which upon the same terms shall not equally belong to all citizens. The primary and basic terms here are using the new bridge to cross the river, not dissecting those terms based on transportation mode used, how the vehicle is powered, the purpose of crossing, and by whom, or even the time of day when the crossing is being used. Another stipulation must be that all the users be treated equally, be it auto commuter, a motor freight carrier, a tradesperson with a vehicle full of tools, an SUV loaded with merchandise for a trade show, a bicyclist, a transit rider, etc. Any tolling must also be equally treated. Therefore, if tolls are charged to any of the users, tolling must be charged to all of the users, including bicycles and transit passengers. Additionally, the tolls charged must not be divisive and must only be used to pay for the bridge, not for social engineering purposes or to subsidize another method of travel or anything else. Furthermore, there also should be a non-tolled motor vehicle route crossing the Columbia that connects the region together. That would be I-205. One of the terms of the commission itself must be that it be comprised of more citizens than politicians, and I think this is in your reference. And those citizens must be representative of both Oregon and Washington, but also must be quantitatively representative on a percentage basis, the various transport modes that use the bridge and not be a politically motivated stacked deck. One other note I might add here is that if Portland disagrees with the decision, they shouldn't be allowed to take their football and go home. And finally, directly to you, Mayor Adams, you have said you want to be everybody's mayor and that you are working hard for the people of Portland. Approximately 80% of the trips in the region are made by motor vehicle. If you are to be everybody's mayor, then you must also represent all those people who choose to drive. And this is not done by viewing motorists as the cash cows to be milked to provide funding for special interest agendas or to subsidize other modes of transport. Moreover, being everybody's mayor is not done by rationing roadway capacity, either by manipulative towing or by any other means. Thank you.
You'll be happy to know, Terry, that yesterday is a meeting around transportation stakeholders. There is representatives from AAA and the Oregon Trucking Association.
Thank you.
Thank you all very much. Appreciate it.
Next three are Michael Stone, Ray Polani, and Mike Smith, and they'll be followed by Jeff Bernards, Jill Fuglister, and Ronald A. Buell.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Glad you're here. Welcome to the City Council.
Mr. Polani, are you going to give us a preview today of the first question you're going to pose to the mayor tomorrow?
Well,
I should say on
you
Friday.
You might.
I was going to say. I'm not quite ready.
You might.
Mr. Stone?
Yeah.
You were first.
Yeah, hi. I'm Michael Stein, actually. Pardon that. I was impressed with how much energy is going forward in the very detailed resolution. So I kind of feel like David against Goliath here a little bit, that there's all this energy going forward. So I know you're inviting us to give you our thoughts. So I hope you're open to input. And I was impressed by the folks who came before me. And I would echo the first gentleman's concern that this would so much more benefit Vancouver than it would Portland. I myself live in Southeast Portland, Mount Tabor neighborhood. Was at one of Amanda's fundraisers at your first try. Sorry, it took two tries.
Worked out very well.
And I work in Vancouver. So I have a commute from every day from inner city of Southeast Portland to Vancouver that takes 25 minutes at rush hour both ways. This is an issue of people coming into Portland at rush hour and leaving Portland at rush hour. That is the problem with the I-5 bridge. If there was enough money to solve all our problems, great. Let's build a huge bridge. My problem, Portland's problem, is the I-5 I-84 junction, also a junction of two major freeways. Really, the front steps, the entrance to downtown Portland for anybody coming from on I-84 and coming south from I-5. Those roads are basically parking lots much of the time. I mean, I'm not just talking at rush hour. I'm talking all the time. And the gentleman who was the environmental specialist, he pointed out the pollution problems of that and people basically parking on the freeways with their motors running. It would be much quicker and if the traffic problem was easier for me to come on my route on I-84 and then I-5. I can't do that. That would be shorter. That would take me 8 miles less. I have to take 205 because I-84 in the morning and in the afternoon is impossible. Starting at 2:30, it's impossible in the afternoon. Starting at 6:30, coming into town, it's impossible. There's other problems with that area there, too. There's unsafe weaves that happen. It's also where the Rose Garden is. So to the solution about the I-5 bridge, excuse me, I'd ask you to consider, I don't know how unsafe the current bridge is, but if there's any way of saving it, let's save it, build it up so that it's earthquake safe, maybe add 2 lanes, or if you're going to have to build a totally new bridge, I would go with the 8-lane idea. And I know I'm running out of time. I have 4 seconds.
Actually, you're 4 seconds over, but...
Am I?
Well said. Thank you for being here today.
Well, I just can't help but observe and tell me where I had this wrong, that it sounds like what your observation is that the rest of the system is bottlenecked, so why should you build an appropriate size bridge? I mean, it sounds to me like you're actually making the case.
Oh, thank you for your question. No, I think the primary problem is the I-84, I-5 junction.
Why is it a problem?
For everything that I said.
It's too constricted. There isn't enough capacity. So
no, it's actually the weave that happens. If you drive that area, you have to, people getting on and off the freeways have to weave. There's not enough capacity for people going different direction. That's where the majority of the traffic is. And I know I should be finished. I just want to say back east, they have lanes that change directions based on where the traffic flow is happening in the morning and in the afternoon.
Well, in Seattle, they do that as well.
And those are safely done. So we could have 2 more lanes on the current bridge, build 8 lanes, and have 2 lanes coming in the morning, 2 lanes going out in the afternoon.
Thank you, Mr. Stein. I really appreciate it. Mr. Polani.
Mr. Mayor, commissioners, good afternoon. My name is Ray Polani. I live in Portland at 6110 Southeast Ankeny Street. I address you as co-chair of Citizens for Better Transit. This moment in time is all about change. We need change, drastic change. However, we definitely do not need a new freeway bridge. But yes, we do need 2 new bridges. In fact, we need 1 for light rail and local traffic, including bikes and pedestrians. And for sure, we need a new railway bridge for the main rail line of the West Coast to accommodate comfortably both freight and passengers, commuters, as well as high-speed rail passengers, because this is the designated high-speed corridor for the West Coast. Global warming and different energy use dictate clearly against highway and freeway expansion. What is desperately required is the provision of viable alternatives, usable light rail and buses for local option, and state-of-the-art rail for intercity movement. Automobiles, trucks, and airplanes use must be reduced, and competitive alternatives must be provided. More than ever, political will and leadership are essential for the radical change the people have chosen with this election, which is a clear break with the past and the current present. People do expect change, not a continuation of the status quo. And leaders must lead in the new direction, or else. Therefore, no new freeway bridge, but yes to 2 new rail bridges for local traffic and the West Coast Freight and Passenger Corridor to address the enormous problems facing our cities, our states, our nation, and indeed the world. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Polani. Sir?
Mayor, commissioners, my name is Mike Smith, and I'm a resident of North Portland. My concern is with a bridge of this scope, 12 lanes, the bottleneck that would be created between Lombard and the I-5-405 split would just be horrendous. And I'm wondering if there's any provision in this plan for widening that area. And if there is there any eminent domain issues in this widening? And the reason I ask that is because I'm a member of this neighborhood that would be directly affected by this. And myself and my neighbors have had some concerns now ever since this CRC project has been announced and can get no answers or any direction in this regard. This is my concern, that this bridge will tear our neighborhood out, or a portion of it. And I would like to see some way of addressing this issue now, because our homes are our major investments. And this would address our financial future. It would affect it directly. And this is my concern. Thank you very much.
Well, I can report to you that if there is eminent domain will be required, but it'll be on portions of Hayden Island that are currently commercial. There's no plans related to this project for any eminent domain requirements from the Lombard south. And I live in Kenton, which is the other neighborhood on the other side of the I-5 freeway. So I paid attention to this particular issue very closely, like you as well. But there is no plans for eminent domain as part of this project in the area that you're talking about.
Thank you.
So who gets to make the eminent domain decisions?
We'll have Richard or somebody else answer that with the precision that I can't. But I can tell you the plans in this project don't include that area.
This project being just the Columbia River project, or does this include, as I'm to understand here, on page, would this include the whole district, the Columbia Crossing District? Uh-huh. Would that include Lombard to the 405 I-5 split?
No, the district boundaries have not been established, but the bridge influence area for this particular project, I think, goes south to Victory.
Okay.
It goes through the Delta Park interchange and terminates at the south side of the Marine Boulevard interchange. The current project that you see going on right now in our neighborhood, that portion of the freeway, that did require some eminent domain, but that's a separate project from this one.
So I'm to understand then that there will be no provisions for widening.
No.
From 12 lanes, then it will go down to 6, and it will be a bottleneck between Lombard and
the
I-5-405 split.
Yes, it'll go down to 3 lanes in each direction. I mean, right now we're widening that section. That
I understand that, yes.
2 lanes each way, that's being widened to 3, so that whole section will be 3 lanes mm-hmm. each way.
But it will go from 6 to 3 in each direction.
Correct, 3 lanes.
With no anticipation of bottlenecking.
Well, it depends on, we can have the engineers, there are 3 through lanes and potentially up to 3 through lanes and 3 auxiliary lanes. And as we get into the discussion after all the testimony, I can also speak to some of your other points, but I want to get the other testifiers up here first.
Thank you.
But I promise we'll cover that. Thank you, Mr. Smith. Thank you, gentlemen. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Carla?
The next 3 are Jeff Bernards, Jill Fuglister, and Ronald A. Buell. And they'll be followed by Stephanie Knoll and Walter Valenta.
Hi, Jeff. Welcome to the City Council. All you need to give us is your first and last name, and you'll have 3 minutes.
Okay. My name is Jeff Bernards. I really like the balance of the council. You're all representative, fiscal conservative. Anyway. So I just had a couple things, like the CRC is doing some lease cost options. It seems no money has been raised to date to help pay for this project. Since it's obvious it's years away, it's time to do some planning now. You've chosen the most expensive option to solve the I-5 congestion problem. I feel you haven't tried any least cost options that would include discounted tolling for people who pay electronically and have their credit card charged, or tolling, you know, like a minimum $5, since it's going to cost $13. I think charging $5 is more than fair. Discount for carpool participants. Encourage businesses to locate in Vancouver to reduce job-related travel, like a PDC, VDC of Vancouver. Maybe raise the gas taxes to have some money to do this. I don't think we should keep borrowing money on the world market to build stuff we are not planning for at all. If this is such a pressing issue, why haven't any of these options been tried temporarily to solve the problem? If they'll work for a new bridge, they'd work for the current bridge. You're hiding the true cost of this bridge by not tolling now. It will make people aware of what this is going to cost. Solving the bottleneck that is the I-5 bridge and not addressing the two lanes that pass through the Rose Quarter area is short-sighted. If you have two broken legs and fix only one, you still can't walk. Expanding the bridge and not solving both problems is like they expanded the convention center and now claim they need a hotel to make the expansion pay. You're going to do the same thing with the bridge. We need to fix the Rose Quarter area to make the I-5 bridge work properly. From what I understand, the state is going to contribute $100 or $200 million. What I was wondering is how many teachers are going to be laid off, how many prisoners are going to be released so the state can make this contribution. The movement in the marketplace now is to buy local. To subsidize the trucking industry only encourages people to buy things from faraway lands and not paying the true costs. I personally stopped eating bananas because they travel so far just to reduce my carbon footprint. I haven't heard any plans for Vancouver to expand MAX to Battleground or U-shape through Vancouver and hook up at 205 so they can get to the airport without using their car. If it's just going to end in Vancouver, I don't think that's a very big commitment from Vancouver. We've had the MAX waiting at 205 and I-5 for a while. They've had plenty of opportunity. They constantly voted down, and I think that they're only going for this bridge MAX so they can get the bridge. They're not that concerned with MAX. Last time gas prices hit $4, many trucking companies went out of business. To spend this much money based on past experiences misleading, you're building a monument to the past.
Thank you, Jeff, very much.
Any questions?
Jill.
Mayor Adams and commissioners, thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Jill Fuglister, and I'm with the Coalition for a Livable Future. We're a partnership of over 90 organizations working for healthy and sustainable communities in the region. At what point are we going to finally shift our actions around road projects to match the goals and values we espouse? Apparently, the answer is not yet. We're very disappointed that you're poised to support 12 lanes in exchange for the creation of a committee whose job will be to ensure the project is accountable to our goals for a sustainable future. How is this a compromise? There's still no clear decision on tolls, which was supposedly a condition of the city's support. The council never got an independent analysis of induced demand or greenhouse gas emissions, things that the council asked for last July. And even if you accept the project's current analysis of greenhouse gas emissions, it shows that it does not meet the adopted goals of the city and the state to reduce emissions. Approving 12 lanes today is giving up the single most valuable leverage point you have for minimizing the negative health and environmental impacts of the project. I feel like part of a commitment to sustainability is really prioritizing the needs and interests of future generations in our own decision making. And in this case, if you approve this resolution, you're ceding your responsibility to future generations via the committee and saying, you take care of it, committee. And why do we think this group, which, especially given the proposed makeup, which largely mirrors the current Project Sponsors Council, will somehow do the very things that nobody has been willing to do yet? What will Portland get out of this decision? Besides a surefire recipe for a worsened bottleneck in the heart of Portland and a new committee, I have no idea.
Thank you, Jill. Ron.
Randy threw down the gauntlet last time. My opponents got a shot at you, and so I'm going to take a crack at doing it in 3 minutes here. Because the supporting work for this project is knowingly dishonest, your project is threatened. The CRC project staff and consultants have used a static land use model, one that assumes that the land use in Clark County will be the same with and without a big new bridge. CRC staff and consultants know there are 5,000 acres in Clark County near I-5 that are zoned for housing but are not developed. Many of these acres are in Battleground, Ridgefield, and LaCenter, distant from workplaces with long freeway travel required. The 20 and 30-year projections that were used for the I-205 bridge when completed in 1982 also used a static land use model and were nearly 50% low in projecting traffic. The gargantuan Glen Jackson Bridge is congested with induced travel at rush hour today. The second independent way in which the CRC staff and consultant work is knowingly dishonest is that it twists the science of queuing theory. The work says that a big new bridge will reduce congestion overall in the freeway corridor, the bridge impact area, and in the region. What queuing theory says instead is that when you eliminate a single bottleneck or choke point in a process flow, that bottleneck, in this case the traffic congestion, simply moves somewhere else in the system. In this case, the congestion will move to I-5 exits and entrances. It will move to surface streets to and from I-5. It will move to the choke point in the Rose Quarter. It will move to the points in I-5 where the freeway narrows to three lanes or two lanes. What these two knowingly dishonest pieces, these knowingly false assumptions admitted by the City Council and Metro taken together do for you is to create errors in the projections, not just for induced travel, VMT, and congestion, but importantly for the resulting air pollution, noise pollution, and global warming pollution projections. These errors were called out to you, Sam, and you and David kind of promised that they would be fixed. And the work has not yet been revised. The highway departments and the CRC staff have stonewalled everybody. Yet this city council is clearly going ahead with a 12-lane project, knowing that you have not yet been honest with the community in the project's environmental costs. Tolls and transit will not somehow fix this dishonest work. They are already assumed in the projections, as you know. These known false assumptions were called up to you in testimony before city council and were written and spoken in testimony on the draft environmental impact statement. The Federal Environmental Protection Agency also wrote about them to you. The basic idea of the National Environmental Protection Act is to bring honesty in considering the environmental costs of a project. There may be a reason why every major environmental and land use organization in this state was represented in testimony in opposition to the 12-lane, $4.2 billion Columbia River crossing. What you're doing in joining this dishonesty
and Ron,
is incongruous. You can't finance
this. If you could bring it to a close, that'd be great.
My last sentence. You can't finance this project, and you won't get it past a NEPA court review.
Thank you all very much. Really appreciate your testimony. Carla?
The last two who signed up are Stephanie Knoll and Walter Valenta.
Ms. Knoll, welcome. Mr. Valenta, welcome to the City Council. All you have to do is give us your first and last name, and you'll have 3 minutes.
All right. My name is Stephanie Knoll. I am representing the Bicycle Transportation Alliance and our 5,000 members in Oregon and Southwest Washington. And I am delivering this testimony on behalf of my colleague, Michelle Poyero. Our members care about the Columbia River crossing for two reasons. One, because they want to see a wonderful world-class bicycle connection between Portland and Vancouver as part of this project. And two, because large highway projects like the CRC have the potential to affect the communities around them, near and far, in ways that can be either good or bad, not just for bicycle and pedestrian safety, but also for community and public health. On January 28th, my colleague Michelle Poyero asked you to connect any decision on the number of lanes that will be part of this project to a decision about the levels of tolling that would be applied to the bridge. Without linking those two decisions, our members are not confident that the goals of this project, fast freight movement, low carbon emissions, improved safety, will be realized for very many years, if at all. Our members have a variety of opinions about the proper width, design, and placement of a new bridge, but most of them share this concern that the lack of quantified goals and an established demand management strategy will cause this project to disappoint most everyone in the end. We continue to work with CRC staff towards a great bicycle facility that commuters and tourists alike will flock to, but we cannot miss this opportunity to express the larger concern BTA members share. Please, council members, tie your decision about the number of lanes to quantified goals and management strategies that will make this a successful project for many years to come. Thank you.
Thanks, Ms. Knowles. Mr. Valenta.
Hi, Walter Valenta. I'm one of those people that have been paying attention to this for the 11-year period and all the different committees.
God bless you.
Well, this is important to the people where I live, and it's important to me personally. I'm here to support the resolution. To me, the resolution is the prize. Everything's been focused pretty much on lanes, as though the number of lanes is the thing that's going to decide how we manage this freeway. It's saying that choke off the lanes so they won't sprawl. That's, you know, we have three lanes in each direction right now, and Clark County sprawled because we don't have this. This is the prize. This is the thing that lets us manage what we're building. There's lots of talk about the induced demand that this could happen, but what I'm seeing is the good things that are happening with the urban planning around the CRC gets forgotten about because people keep thinking it's all about Clark County sprawling out in battleground. Downtown Vancouver is going to add 10,000 housing units if they pull this off. Hayden Island's going to double its population. If we do Marine Drive right, we're going to create another recreational corridor by moving Marine Drive a little bit away from the river as we rebuild it. Maybe the induced demand that we're going to do is induced tightly built demand, not sprawling demand. And so this has a land use component. That's why this is the prize. And we're in a political environment where you have to give and take. So the other side wanted the lanes. To me, getting the ability to manage both bridges and have an ongoing way to manage the extra capacity is worth the compromise, and I'm here to support this. I think it's a very good thing and actually the most important thing that we could get out of the CRC. Thank you.
Thank you, Walter. And he came on his own volition. We didn't even invite him. Anybody else?
Saul, who signed up.
Anybody else in the room that would like to testify? Come on up. Come on up. We have three chairs. I think we've got three folks. Welcome to the City Council. We're glad you're here. All you have to give is your first and last name, and you'll each have 3 minutes, and the clock will tell you how you're doing. Why don't we begin with you?
Great. Thanks. I'm Brock Howell with Environment Oregon, and we had testified earlier on this matter in opposition to a 12-lane bridge. And I just wanted to reiterate our position of our concerns that the effect will have on global warming. And then the secondary position that we hope that this land use component will become a binding component to ensure that Clark County does not sprawl and that both sides are treated fairly as well. I think it's key here that we treat Clark County fairly and that we're protecting the environment at the same time. So I hope that in this process of achieving this goal that we find an innovative approach of ensuring that their UGA does not increase in size and that they do not upzone rural agricultural or forest lands. If we can do that, we've at least achieved one half. We remain very concerned about the global warming aspects here. I'm not sure what stage we're at to be able to influence that discussion. But that's where we think the debate needs to shift, is to making sure we have better development on the other side of the river.
Thank you very much. Sir?
My name is Christopher Steig. I'm a geography major at Belton State. The history of the freeway system in Oregon has been a topic of interest to me. And the concerns regarding the expansion of the interstate bridge, the Columbia River crossing, leading to bottlenecks at the Rose Corridor, the I-5-405 loop, seems to be a valid concern. However, I also know that this has been a topic of study by a commission recently, and I don't know what their recommendations were, but I think this is something that has been addressed in the past, and hope to know what those results would be. In the meantime, as far as whether the Columbia River Crossing gets built, that to me is something I look forward to, whether it gets built as a 6-lane or even a 12-lane expansion.
Thanks for being here. Appreciate your testimony, sir.
Alan Willis is my name. I apologize for missing the sign-up sheet. I was delighted to see this headline in this morning's paper. As I have followed this issue, I have been concerned that for a variety of reasons, many of which I understand and am sympathetic with, that we might once again go after and build something that was less than needed for the time period that we needed it. I'm here today to fully support the resolution that's in front of the council. I was always kind of hoping for a 12-lane solution, but I think what you've come up here with this council and the notion of going up to 12 lanes and the ability, if this works, to really manage that and be inclusive of the I-205 crossing is probably the best, wisest, most balanced, and realistic way to go after this question. I fully support the resolution.
Thank you all very much. Really appreciate your testimony. All right. I think that covers Henry. So we're very lucky. The co-chair of the Project Sponsors Council is in the room, and I didn't know if you were here to observe or to testify, but this is Henry Hewitt, and he was also the co-chair of the big committee that went on for 27 years. How long was that?
Half my lifetime.
Half your life. Well, we're glad you're here.
Thank you. I didn't come really to speak, but I was struck by a couple of things. One, I'm encouraged by the progress being made by the project's sponsors council to reach consensus. And the op-ed piece this morning was one element of that. I thought that the piece was well done and covered all the issues that I think are important that I can think of. And I think that the collaboration among the government entities on both sides of the rivers at an all-time high, and creating a framework for the future on this issue and other issues, I think that will be very helpful and encouraging as we address the reality of one region rather than many, many governments on this side of the river and the other side of the river. The bridge is a multimodal bridge. I think sometimes that gets lost in the discussion around the number of lanes. The transit and mass transit benefits and the light rail benefits of the proposed bridge are significant, maybe overwhelming in terms of what they will bring to our region. The benefit of the advisory committee on this subject and other subjects, I think you can't hardly look forward well enough to understand how that will play out in terms of operating the bridge and making sure that it operates correctly to meet the goals that we have for it. I think those are dynamic concepts. What we might decide today may or may not be exactly the way we want it in 10 years, and having a mechanism in place so that we realize everybody will need to agree in order to make changes in the way in which the bridge is operated. Performance standards also dynamic. It's important to have those on the table and get them created, but understand that we will change how we think the standards ought to be and what they ought to be in the future as we see how it operates in fact. And the last point I guess I'd like to make is that the number of lanes on the bridge, the number of add-drop lanes, the three add-drop lanes each way that are being discussed, really have very little to do with the number of vehicles crossing the river. And it's virtually entirely about how the interchanges operate on both sides of the river. And those lanes on the bridge are what facilitate getting on and off at Marine Drive, getting on and off at Hayden Island, in and out of Vancouver. And the number of lanes really dictate the congestion at the interchanges and the bottlenecks of the freight and users that are getting onto the freeway or off the freeway at those various points. So I think that if we end up with a 12-lane bridge,